comments and views expressed on The Kevin Smith Show are those of the people that make them and do not necessarily reflect the views of Kevin Smith, The Kevin Smith Show, or its affiliates or sponsors.
Hi, folks, and welcome to the Kevin Smith Show, whoever you are, wherever you are, all around this beautiful planet we call Earth. Thanks for being here at the Kevin Smith Show. Those of you joining us for the very first time, welcome aboard. We're glad to have you. Hope you make a habit out of it. A little bit of news out in space right now. The space shuttle and the space station may have to be moved to avoid being struck by a piece of space junk that's going to be coming through. Remember the two satellites that collided and everyone said, well, nobody saw this coming. Okay. The Indian satellite, I reported on that yesterday. We talked about it some with Richard Hoagland last night. The Indian satellite... I'll have to check this. I'd really have to confess, I don't know for sure. But now, Hoagland said that there is no radar that can track anything that's in orbit around the moon. The article, in fact, several articles that I read on it, quoted the Indian Space Agency as saying it disappeared off their radar. And they're considering asking either the United States or Russia to take a look for it because, and I quote, they have very powerful radar. So I'll have to check that out. Anyway, that Indian satellite, before it vanished, you know, it was taking some high-resolution 3D photographs of the surface of the moon. And according to the Indian Space Agency, it photographed the landing site of Apollo 15, including some good pictures of the tracks left by that little moon buggy that they were driving around up there, the lunar rover. So, if that's the case, then obviously they went. Also, not in space, but pretty interesting, over in Texas, Chupacabra is making the news again. In Blanco, Texas, a guy brought the body of a very strange animal to a taxidermist. Neither the taxidermist nor the guy that brought it in said they'd ever seen anything like it before. And they really didn't know what to call it. They're not officially saying this is chupacabra, but they said, you know, for lack of anything better to call it, we'll call it a chupacabra. CNN has video of this thing. To me, it looks like some kind of a wild dog species, but it's canines. Its canines come way down, I mean, like vampire fangs. And it's really pretty weird. And it doesn't have any hair. It's, you know, just kind of leathery looking. So if you haven't seen that yet, go over and check it out on CNN's videos. We'll put a link to it in this week's K-Files e-zine. And that brings me to this. If you're not subscribed to the K-Files e-zine, you need to go to my website, kevinsmithshow.com, and subscribe to our free weekly newsletter. It is really, honestly free. No strings attached. And you can unsubscribe anytime you so desire to do so. My guest this evening is Barbara Lamb. And she is one of the nation's leading authorities on alien abductions. We'll be back right after this. And welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. As I stated, my guest this evening is Barbara Lamb. Now, Barbara Lamb is a licensed psychotherapist, a certified hypnotherapist, and regression therapist in private practice in Claremont, California. Now, you may be saying, yeah, well, so what? I mean, that's like, you know, there are thousands of psychotherapists around the country. There are thousands of hypnotherapists, just like there's thousands of talk show hosts. Yeah, but she specializes in regression therapy with people who experience encounters with extraterrestrial and interdimensional beings. From 1991 up until now, she has regressed 671 persons to abductions and visitations by these unusual beings, totaling at least 1,870 regressions to these kinds of experiences. So 671 people, 1,870 regressions. Barbara, welcome to the Kevin Smith Show.
Well, thank you, Kevin, and what a nice introduction.
Well, I'll tell you what, Barbara, you do something that is, to say the least, a little bit unusual. Not for us, but certainly I think for people out in living their lives in the establishment box, I think they would probably consider this to be quite unusual.
I would think so, too, but what really surprises me, Kevin, is that sometimes if I'm meeting a new person, oh, on an airplane trip, for instance, or just kind of out and around, or clients who come to me for regular psychotherapy reasons, once in a while this subject comes up. And what surprises me is how many people say, oh, yeah, well, I know somebody who had a very vivid UFO sighting and thought that something might have happened to them with the occupants, or a lot of people will say, you know, I've been thinking that we couldn't be the only ones in the universe, we humans, couldn't be the only ones who have intelligent life and can travel. So it's, I think, somehow catching on a bit in the population that, you know, there are these crafts that visit and that occupants of those crafts, in many cases, have something to do with human people.
Yeah, and you know, the various polls that have been done show that actually a very large majority of the people in the United States, at least, say that UFOs are real and that the government is hiding something. Now, that's not exactly the same line of reasoning that we're talking about here tonight with you, but the point is that the majority of the population accepts the idea of extraterrestrials.
Well, it really does seem so, and I've noticed a big difference even in the last 5 years in regard to that. When I started doing this work with people who experience the actual encounters with other beings, I began that in 1991, just people in the general population whom I would happen to meet with and talk with for other reasons, they would look very skeptically at me and think, oh, I don't know about that, that's just too weird. But I would think really in the last 5 years or so, there's been kind of an across-the-board change, at least on the part of many people, being more open to the thought, and I would say the fact, that these kinds of encounters really do happen with many people.
All right, in your bio it says that you specialize in regression therapy with people who experience encounters with extraterrestrial and interdimensional beings.
Yes.
Describe the difference between those two beings, if you will.
Okay, well, there may be some lap over between both of those kinds of beings, but I think generally speaking, we tend to think of extraterrestrial beings as tending to come in a physical form, as if they always have physical bodies.
Mm-hmm.
And they do things physically with people, and people even have indications on their bodies, certain kinds of markings and scars and so forth, that certainly lead them to think, well, gee, here's evidence, here's proof that something physically has happened with these other beings who've come. And interdimensional beings, they may be more like guides. We could call them spirit guides. They might be extraterrestrial beings as well. Sometimes it's hard to delineate, but they might be guides. They might be more angelic beings. They might be spirits. For instance, spirits of somebody you might have been close to, might have loved, who has died and subsequently has visits. So it's difficult to say. And I sort of make a distinction here in my work with the physical beings who seem to take the person physically and do physical things with the person, as compared to what I tend to call interdimensional beings, who come maybe for inspiration, maybe for some more enlightening reasons, and they may download information into the person, and they may or may not actually seem to take the person somewhere for an hour or two, as the others seem to do. So these interdimensional beings very often look sort of semi-transparent rather than solid and physical, and very often they're reported to be sort of shining and glowing, and usually the person who experiences this kind of being reports that, oh, this being seemed to be so loving and warm and caring, even unconditionally loving. So whereas they don't report that sort of feeling about many of the other extraterrestrial beings who seem to be more physical.
Okay, now Barbara, you are a licensed psychotherapist.
Right.
Meaning, of course, that you have what I refer to it as establishment training.
Yes, that's true.
Classical training, establishment training. And in light of that, how do you differentiate between a real interdimensional being having interacted with someone? How do you differentiate between that and simply an overactive imagination?
Oh, that's such an excellent question. Of course, most people would wonder that. So that's why that's very important. Well, I think just on the surface of it, when somebody hears somebody else talking about this sort of experience, the listener might think, oh, yeah, sure. This person must be a little bit loony or might be just imagining things. But I think the proof of the pudding, for me, happens in two ways. One of them is taking the experience that they remember. Usually they just remember a little bit of it, like maybe the first few moments or even the first or the last few moments of what seemed to be something very strange that happened to them. And then if we do a hypnotic regression to go back into whatever was in that sort of blank or missing period of time at that event, that's when the details seem to come out. And so it's important to realize that the subconscious part of our minds records absolutely everything that we ever experience in any way, even those things that we have not consciously remembered. So the regression is something where you, or I should say I, lead the person into a very nice state of deep relaxation and suggest that we're going to go back and revisit that particular time that they remember, and whatever little clues they do consciously remember from the experience that they think they've had. And in this very nice deep state of relaxation, we go back, and very often they'll have a date that they remember, or it might be something as sort of general as, well, I know it was in the month of June in 1972, or it might have been last week, you know, as recently, or even last night. But we'll go back to that experience in that very deep, open, receptive state, and then the whole experience that actually unfolded then, that will be coming out in regression moment by moment by moment. And it always seems to fit any markings or any indications on their physical bodies that they may have noticed after that experience that they've been wondering about. So it's very nice when those two things tie in together. And
so then basically, I guess what you're saying is it's the amount of detail that they provide that helps you to differentiate between whether it was real or imagination.
Yes, and you see, they never just look back and say, oh, such and such happened, and then it was followed by such and such, and so on. In other words, they don't just consciously look back and tell a story. As I said, they might remember, oh, just a minute or two at the most, of the beginning of one of these unusual experiences. That's all they'll remember consciously. But in the regression, instead of they're telling a story about it, it's as if they're actually reliving it moment by moment. And they never know from moment to moment what's going to happen next. In other words, there's no entire story or scenario that they're relating to me. And they sometimes are the most surprised person at what actually unfolds in the regression. And then, of course, it's very important after the regression for me to ask the person who's just been regressed, what do you think about this? This was coming from you. How real do you think these details were? And, you know, in, I'd say, 99 out of 100 cases, the person will say, oh, yeah, that absolutely was real. I could never have imagined the details of that. And I know that it's real. I can feel the reality of it. So you see, if somebody was making it up from their imagination, I really don't think they'd feel that sense of sureness and reality of the experience.
I'm sure you're familiar with Betty and Barney Hill and their abduction story, right?
Yes, I am.
Okay. I had her niece on the show the other night, Betty Hill's niece. Her name is Kathleen Marden.
Mm-hmm.
And she told us something that I found to be really pretty amazing, and that is that after that abduction experience, and after all of the regressions and everything, time goes by, and then Betty goes under hypnosis. I don't know, I guess regression again. Anyway, what comes out is that once every year since that initial abduction, these aliens were revisiting her, and she was having contact with them. But when she was conscious and not under hypnosis, she totally rejected that and said, it's not true. I haven't had any other contact.
Oh, hmm.
Now, what would account for that?
Well, you see, I think that we tend to think of things in certain ways. In other words, she, Betty, probably had a whole belief invested in the fact that that type of encounter happened only once. And when we believe something like that and want it to be that way, she probably wanted it to be true that she had only one encounter, then that kind of belief often overrides in the conscious mind what you know, could come out from the subconscious mind. So she may have just continued with that belief, no, I don't remember anything else, and that's all that happened. But, and I run into this quite a bit, Kevin, when I'm doing regression work with somebody. For instance, the person will be in the regression and will be revisiting moment by moment a particular event, an encounter with an extraterrestrial, and I might, during that regression, when we've really gotten most of the material of what happened in that particular episode, I might say, are these beings familiar, or has this ever happened to you before? And the person might say, oh yes, I've seen these many times, I've seen them since early childhood, and then they'll describe, or they might even sort of spontaneously go back to an experience or two that did happen in childhood. But yet, when they're conscious again, and they've been so focused on the thought that they've just had the one encounter that they came to me about, to regress to, they may sort of continue that belief consciously, that that was the only time that such an encounter happened.
Okay, well, you know, here's I guess, I'll throw this out, and we have less than, a minute and a half until break. I don't know, we can get into it and then pick it up again after break. My focus in bringing that up, I've heard about these aliens installing what some people call screen memories.
Yes.
And what I wonder is if during the regression you get behind the screen, but when they're conscious, the screen is installed really in their conscious mind.
Oh, that is a very, very good point on your part. I'm impressed, actually. Yeah, I think that that's true. That and that's one of the points of doing the regression, because you get below the conscious mind into what's actually been recorded in the subconscious mind. But the person might continue that screen idea or screen belief when they're conscious again. So therefore, I think it's really, really important to tape record every one of these encounter regressions that I do, and I give the tape to the person, because if they listen to it again, they might hear things that came out of their own mouth that they haven't consciously remembered after the regression.
And I would think if these extraterrestrials have installed a screen memory in my conscious mind, they probably have deactivated whatever defenses in my conscious mind I have against a screen memory. We have to step away for break. And when we come back, we'll continue with that. I got another point or two I want to bring up about that. We'll be back, folks, right after this, so don't go away. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. My guest this evening is Barbara Lamb. Barbara is a licensed psychotherapist, a certified hypnotherapist, and regression therapist in private practice in Claremont, California. She is also an author. I think you're probably familiar with a book called Crop Circles Revealed. That's Barbara Lamb. And there's a new book, the latest book, Alien Experiences, co-authored with Nadine Lalich. And in it, she presents 25 cases of close encounters never before revealed. Barbara, when we stepped away for break, I had just said it would make sense to me that if you're going to install a screen memory in someone's conscious mind, that you would install its support system there, and you would deactivate the defense system there. Meaning that when my conscious mind is functioning, my defenses that would tell me, hey, you know, this isn't real, those have been deactivated by the installation process of this screen memory.
Well, boy, I appreciate your thinking about this. You really have thought about this.
I really have. I've been looking forward to this show.
Good. Well, so have I. Yeah, the whole screen image and screen memory subject is very, very fascinating. And one of the things I find in doing a regression is that it's important to watch out, from my point of view as a regressing therapist, it's important to watch out for things that might be screens for something else really going on. So if there's anything at all that seems to be doubtful for me, I'll have the person pause and perhaps go back over that portion again and again, or even in a subsequent regression, if they come back for more, to go back over that part of the episode again, just to go deeper and deeper and see if there's anything else beyond what might be the screen. Because sometimes I think these beings really do use that. And it seems to me that the beings who do use this sort of screen image or screen memory process, at least in my experience in regressing people, they may be trying to cover something that they know the person really would not respond well to. Person might resent or not like at all. For instance, some sort of physical process that the beings do with the person. And I think they try to cover that or hide that or minimize the impact sometimes by putting the screen image on. And as the person becomes more and more willing to see what might be under that screen, then it seems like the real information, the real memories, tend to come out. So it's really an amazing mechanism that these beings have, just like so many things that they do. And I think also part of the screen image has to do with the fact that at least some of these beings are trying to study us, trying to study the emotional reactions, particularly of people whom they have encounters with. So they might, for instance, show in an encounter, and it might be on a spacecraft, or it might even be in the person's room at home, but wherever it is, they might show a very powerful image of a loved one of the person who had previously died, or who's been missing, or, you know, just generally speaking, not around for the person, and they'll watch the reaction of the person. And that may be a screen image that they're putting, almost like a hologram of that loved person. And then they see the joy, the surprise, the welcoming, the perplexity, and, you know, all of these mixtures of emotions that the person might have. And the beings don't seem to care particularly about what the screen image is. I mean, they know it's a screen. Uh-huh. But they do care very much about the person's reactions. And this brings up a whole enormous subject that it seems like most of these beings, or maybe all of them, that I've ever heard about in detail during these regressions, these beings of all different kinds from all different places in the universe seem to be either devoid of emotional reactions or very, very low in terms of emotional reactions.
Okay, well, now let me ask a question before we go much further, because this question is prompted by some of what you've been saying.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, we could say then that they are not above using deception in order to see what kind of response we have.
So, it does seem that way in many cases.
Okay, now, is it possible for them to use kind of a double deception? Let's say the screen memory fails. And you start remembering having been on this ship, and they've got kind of a backup that is saying you're just remembering a dream.
Well, that is something that I run into a lot with people. They'll come in for a regression, and on the one hand they say, oh, that experience that I had, and they might even remember little bits and pieces of having been with the beings on a craft, and they'll say, you know, it must have been a dream, because I was asleep at night in my bed, and then I woke up and I remembered these little bits and pieces as if it had just happened. So it, on the one hand, I think it must be a dream, the person says, but on the other hand, it seems so real. I think it really happened. And that's one of the reasons why some people will come in to have a regression, to sort of determine, oh, was this just a dream, or was it really a whole episode that they can remember in regression from the beginning to the end?
Well, let me tell you something I read today.
Okay.
The guy who is going to be the new prime minister in Japan, mm-hmm. his wife wrote in her book that she had been taken by extraterrestrials to Venus.
Really?
Yes. And she said, but you know, I think I must have been asleep. My body stayed here, and they took my soul on a triangular craft and went to Venus. And she describes in her book what she saw on Venus. So I'm wondering, did she have a dream, or did she actually go to Venus physically and they have this sort of backup screen memory that tells her, you know what, you just dreamed it?
Well, yeah, that certainly could happen, but you're raising a very interesting aspect here, and that is that it certainly seems like some of these encounters happen just in the astral body, in other words, the spirit body that we are, the energy field around our physical bodies. So very frequently it seems like the person's physical body might be left right where it was, in other words, in this case, in bed, sleeping, but that soul part, the spirit part, the energy body part of the person may be taken for whatever the experience is. And in what you're suggesting here about the prime minister's wife, most of us would think, oh, for goodness sake, nobody could really be taken to Venus and brought back and still be all right and have that happen just in one night. And then we think of Venus, too, as being all covered with a hugely thick layer of gases and toxic material before you even get to the surface of that planet. And so we wonder how a person could survive that. However, if the person is taken just in the astral body, the spirit body, and not the physical body, it makes that seem much more plausible. The physical body wouldn't be harmed because the physical body didn't actually go, but the astral body went, and the astral body cannot be harmed. So, you know, I don't know in her case, but it certainly seems like that could have been a real experience.
All right, and let me add to it. Let me add to it. I did some additional study and some research, because of the fact that while I personally am not a religious person, this show is not antagonistic toward people who are religious.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not antagonistic toward people who are religious. And a great, great many, I would say probably the majority of my audience worldwide are at one level or another somewhat religious. Some of them very.
Okay.
And I went looking in the Bible for something similar to what she said. And here's what I found. I found a couple of places. One where the prophet says, whether I was in the, and I think this was Paul, the apostle, but he says, whether I was in the spirit or in the flesh, I don't know. But let me tell you what happened. Now, that's sort of descriptive of what she just said in her book.
Right.
You know, I don't know whether it was in the flesh, my physical body, or whether it was in the spirit, my astral body. We use different terms than what the Bible used, but he's describing the same thing.
I think so. I think he was.
All right.
I think that we could even say or we could even wonder the same thing about Jesus after he was crucified and then later visited his disciples. Maybe he came back in that astral form.
Well, it could be, but now they made claims that they touched him and that they ate with him, so that was physical.
That's true. That's true.
Mm-hmm. But you know, I found that statement by, I think it was Paul, I found that to be so parallel with what the Prime Minister's wife wrote, and also so parallel with what I've heard a number of people say. That they couldn't tell whether they usually say, I don't know if it was real or if I was just dreaming. Well, they're describing the same kind of thing. It was too real to be a dream, but too fantastic to be real.
Right. Yeah, well, I can't tell you how many times I hear that from people. And again, I think that's why it's so helpful if a person who wonders that can find a qualified person to do a good, legitimate regression on them to get the details. And sometimes in those regressions, they know that their body is being left where the experience started, but yet the rest of them, their conscious self, that astral sense, is going on and having the rest of the experience. And then on the other hand, many people in regressions experience that their body is being levitated off the bed.
All right, Barbara, we have to step away for a couple of minutes for a break. We'll pick up there when we come back. And folks, you don't want to miss any of this. A single second is a universe of information. We'll be back. Welcome back. My guest this evening is Barbara Lamb, and we're talking about her experience as a licensed psychotherapist and a certified hypnotherapist and regression therapist dealing with people who have had ET encounters and encounters with interdimensional beings. Barbara, this whole thing about interdimensional beings is pretty interesting to me.
Yes, me too.
One of the theories that I've heard about this is that perhaps these interdimensional beings are not actually present, but are sort of holographic images that are being projected by an ET somewhere. What do you think?
Well, I think that is certainly possible. I don't know if that's actual. I don't know if that's what is really happening there. It certainly seems to the people who experience these interdimensional beings that they are right there. I mean, they would probably, swear their life on it. Oh, yeah, that one was right there by my bed or showed up in my living room in the light of day, for instance.
Mm-hmm.
But yet, these other beings have so many unusual abilities that we don't know how to do yet. Maybe eventually we will. That maybe they can project that. But the people who experience them really feel a tremendous difference between what they think of or experience as the physical extraterrestrial beings and the interdimensional beings. And, I mean, their whole response is very different. And I need to hasten to add that any one person who experiences these encounters could have experiences with quite a number of different types of beings. It's not all the same one being or even same group of beings that always visit a person who experiences this. And there are many, many different types of extraterrestrial beings, and I'm sure interdimensional beings. So,
okay, now let me ask you a question about that. Among the physical manifestations, the physical, you know, the ETs were physically with me, and they physically touched me and talked to me and so forth. Among that crowd of ETs, we've heard descriptions of the small grays. We've heard descriptions of reptilians. We've heard descriptions of some that look kind of like a praying mantis.
That's right.
We've heard some that look like humans. Among the interdimensional beings, do you have various descriptions, or do they all look human or angelic, or, you know, what's the deal with them?
Oh, yeah. No, there's quite a number of different types that have been described in the regressions that I've done, and I think we could still call these ones that I'm referring to as interdimensional beings. For instance, a client that I had and regressed, he had this encounter in his office, which was in his home, and he looked over one day, and across the room there was a group of very shining, glowing beings who were extremely tall. They probably just about touched the ceiling with their heads, and very, very thin, just, oh, maybe 3 or 4 inches wide in their heads and in their bodies. And they were just semi-transparent and shining and glowing and exuding the most wonderful, loving feelings. He absolutely was very positively impressed with these beings and hoped very, very much that he would see them again. So that's one type, the very tall, very, very thin.
3 or 4 inches wide?
Yes. 4 inches wide, even their shoulders. So he, in fact, this client described them as the spring onion people. You know, if you had a spring onion, a scallion, and held it upside down with a little bulb part up at the top, that was like the head of this particular type of being. And then the bodies were very long and very, very thin, except that they weren't solid like a spring onion would be. They were sort of, as I said, semi-transparent and glowing. So that's one type. Now, another type that a different client of mine, a woman whom I regressed many, many times, she was taken to a meeting. It seemed like a small council meeting with different kinds of beings, which seemed to be from different parts of the universe, as far as she could tell. And they sat around a table, like a board meeting table. And across from her were 4 beings, which she described as blue, glowing beings. Now, they were not tall and thin, but they were kind of oval-shaped. And they were mostly just this beautiful blue, glowing energy. But in the center part of them, from the heads right down on through the bodies, it was more dense. It was more of a deeper blue color. But then out of them, all around, 360 degrees, radiated this beautiful light that sort of shimmered and wavered. And they made a lovely sound, according to her. They made sort of a high tinkling sound. And she was absolutely enthralled and intrigued and just thought, oh, these are lovely, lovely beings. And yet next to them were sitting some other types, like the tall insectoid type, for instance, and then her mentor, extraterrestrial mentor, who is a very white-skinned, tall being with some kind of straw-like, light-colored hair, but features that were a little bit more like a human being, quite a bit more, and blue eyes. And then next to that one was one that looked more like a reptilian being. But by contrast with these physical types, these glowing beings that I was describing were just absolutely intriguing and enthralling. In fact, they were so intriguing for her and so delightful that she couldn't concentrate on what the meeting was about, what they were trying to discuss. And she was actually deleted from the meeting. They told her they were going to have to take her home because they realized she just couldn't concentrate on what they were supposed to be discussing. So that's another type. And then very often people will have right by their bed a glowing being, might look similar to a gray being with big eyes, but in this case they're taller and slimmer than what we usually hear about, and the eyes are not black. The eyes might be a deeper blue color, but it seems like there's almost no edge to their bodies. These beings are just glow and light, kind of shimmering and often sort of undulating.
Almost a Casper the Friendly Ghost sighting.
Well, sort of, except that Casper actually, at least in the pictures that I've seen of him, he actually has edges around his body. In this case, these beings don't seem to have any real edge. It's just sort of a fuzzy, shiny glow. And then
so they just sort of fade away at the edge, huh?
Yes, with a glow, a light.
Mm-hmm.
So the center part of the being might have a sort of a pink color to it, and then that will fade out lighter and lighter toward the edges, or it might be blue, as I've mentioned, or it might be purple, or it might be just white.
All right, we have a break that is just about to take over here in about 20 seconds, and when we come back from this break, I want us to get into this question. Out of all of these cases that you have dealt with, have you been able to assemble, at least in your own mind, some key indicators that tell you whether the person has had a real ET encounter or whether there's something else working here? And we've only got a few seconds left here, so we won't get into that. But, I will not ask you to tell us what all those indicators are, but just, are there some key indicators that would help you to determine if it's real or if something else is working? And then we'll open up the phone lines for our audience. We'll be back right after this. Welcome back. Let me remind all of you that we have this contest going on. For those of you who have some talent with graphic arts, we're looking for a logo for the Kevine Knights. This logo would be used on t-shirts. It'll be used on coffee mugs. It'll be used on ball caps. And we're going to wrap it up at the end of this month. We have some entries already, but if you've got some talent with graphic arts, you need to email me and attach your entry, all right? Okay, my guest this evening is Barbara Lamb. Barbara Lamb is a licensed psychotherapist and certified hypnotherapist and regression therapist in private practice in Claremont, California. She specializes in regression therapy with people who experience encounters with extraterrestrials and interdimensional beings. Barbara, before we went away for break, I proposed a question. And that is, through all of these regressions that you've done, all of these cases that you've worked with people, have you developed for yourself some key indicators that tell you whether this person is dealing with a real event or something else is at work?
Yes, there are several things. One of the sort of clues, as I call them, that some kind of encounter like this has happened is what we commonly think of as missing time. In other words, a person might be driving along on the road, daytime or nighttime, and something peculiar happens. They see a bright light coming from above or coming in the car window, and they don't see a source of it. And then the car motor starts to slow down and come to a stop. Hopefully they pull off the road before it actually does seem to die out. And then they're aware that there are unusual beings with them, coming toward them in the car or taking them out of the car. And they might have noticed what time it was as these peculiar things started to happen. And then the next thing they know consciously, they're sort of coming to again, almost as if waking up. And they look at their clock or their watch and they think, oh my gosh, it's 2 hours later than I thought it should be, or an hour and a half later. So these missing time experiences can happen in all kinds of different situations where the person is actually having an encounter and time goes by. And by the way, that can even happen to a person with other people around. And what happens to the other people in the vicinity when this type of experience happens is that they become what we call switched off. In other words, they become rendered completely unaware of anything, even anything in their environment, when this kind of encounter is happening. And then when the person is returned again, then everybody sort of comes to, they open their eyes and continue doing what they were doing, and then they eventually realize, well, gee whiz, where did that hour and a half or 2 hours go to? It's just a blank. So that, you know, is a very important clue.
Have you ever seen a movie called Dark City?
No, I've heard of it, but I've never seen it. Have you seen that one?
Many times. It's interesting, but it's disturbing because it's so plausible when we look at some of the things that happen on this planet. These people believe it looks like Earth, looks like an Earth city, and they believe that they are just going about their daily lives. What they don't know is that at nighttime, we would say aliens inject them with complete new memories, and so who they were married to yesterday, they're not married to today. They wake up with someone else, but with the memory that they have been married to that person for the last 30 years.
Wow.
And a cop wakes up. Yesterday he was a criminal on death row, and today he's a detective, and he's got the memory that he's been a detective for the past 15 years. Mm-hmm. And this happens, they change the city around, and they change the people around, different roles, and what they're doing is studying the emotions of these people and the reactions of these people.
Mm-hmm.
And it's fascinating, and the reason I said it's disturbing because of its plausibility, you look at what goes on this planet and wonder, who's messing with us?
Yeah, wow. Well, that's a very fascinating subject, for sure. I'd like to get back to the clues of maybe having had these encounters.
Yeah.
Another one would be the markings on people's bodies. In other words, something peculiar happened, they began to remember the first few moments of something unusual, and they also realize when that experience is over, or wake up the next morning, that they have scoop-shaped marks taken out of their skin, or they have little straight line cuts, or they might have a circle made of what look like little pinprick marks, or maybe two little dots somewhere, their hand, their arm, their back. They might have triangular bruises, or they might have little bruises, like a series, maybe three or four or five little bruises that look like they were made by fingertips.
Uh-huh.
These are some of the common ones. And then if they do the regression and some process happened that actually made those markings, and you can see the marking on their body, you know, that's a pretty good indication. Another thing, of course, is implants that many people discover sooner or later, that they have a little bump somewhere in their body under the skin. It could be almost any place in the body. Could even be in a jaw, or it could be in a tooth, or behind the ear, or at the base of the head by the spine, or could be between the toes, or the fingers, or the wrists, or the thigh. And they notice these little objects. It feels like a little BB from a BB gun, that sort of a feeling. And then these implants have actually been taken out sometimes. Dr. Roger Lear in Southern California has been very excellent about removing surgically these implants. And the implants are very small, and he very carefully preserves them and sends them off to a series of different laboratories for testing. And the results come back saying that the composition of these little implants is something that we do not know how to make. It doesn't seem to be from anything on Earth. So when you combine an implant with a person remembering these peculiar things, and particularly having regressions, you know, this begins to sort of add up. So other people will sometimes have fears that could be an indicator of having these things happen. For instance, some people, I've met many people like this, who will do everything they possibly can to stay awake at night, every single night, until a particular time when they feel safe. Now, for some people, that could be 2:30 in the morning. Other people, it might be 3 o'clock or 4 o'clock or 4:30. But in any event, once they get to that particular time, then they think, oh, good, nothing's going to happen. So it's safe for me to go to sleep now.
Mm-hmm.
And people have other kinds of fears, too. Some people, for instance, have fear of driving at night, even if there was somebody else, because as it turns out, they've had an encounter that started while they were driving at night. Or they have fears of certain places, like many people who've had these encounters really hate to go to doctor's offices or hospitals, and they'll try to avoid it at all costs. And these are places that have very big, shiny floors, or where they don't actually see the source of the light in that interior place. Airports are another environment that a lot of people who experience these things don't like. And then, of course, medical procedures. If people have had medical procedures in their encounters by these strange beings, they might be very uncomfortable having any kind of procedure or examination done by even a human doctor. And then, of course, we have the post-traumatic stress syndrome, where certain people just go into enormous stress reactions, panic even, when they have certain flashbacks of, you know, an alien face, for instance, or
mm-hmm.
Some sort of procedure or some sort of situation in which they feel they can't move or they're trapped or whatever. And those, of course, are very, very uncomfortable. But when you put those flashbacks with the fears, the markings, the missing time, the implants, and then, of course, ultimately the regression. That all seems to go together very, very strongly as indication of reality. And some people, and I think this is always fascinating, some people who are taken at night, for instance, from their beds, which is a very typical thing, they may be returned elsewhere in the room that they were taken from, or even in another part of the house they were taken from, or outside the house, and all the doors of the house have been locked at night and still are locked from the inside, or they may be taken from down the road a good bit, maybe a mile or a few miles away, or even children sometimes. One woman I worked with a number of times in regression, it happened two or three times to her that when she was walking home from school, she walked past a certain field to get to her house. And in about three or four different instances, different days, she was taken by these extraterrestrial beings and kept away for a couple of hours, and then returned somewhere along that street or the field or maybe in back of her house. And she'd wonder, how did I get here? And she'd wonder why her mother was so angry with her for being so late coming home from school. And the poor kid couldn't really explain it. She'd just say, well, I don't know. I was just walking along. And
oh, yeah. And
I knew.
Next thing I knew, I was somewhere else.
Somewhere else, yeah.
Okay, Barbara, we have a caller that's been holding now for about 3 minutes, so we've got to take the call.
Okay.
Caller, you are live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Hello, Kevin. Hello, Barbara. This is Mike from Kentucky.
Hi, Mike.
Mike.
And, Barbara, I'm also a UFO researcher, and I've done UFO abduction cases here in my area. But my main reason for calling tonight, there's a new movie coming out on November the 6th called The Fourth Kind. And I'm wondering, it's about the work of Abigail Tyler up in Nome, Alaska. Have you heard of hers?
No, I'm sorry, I haven't. I'd like to know about her.
Well, she started working on in Nome up there. They started having a disproportionate amount of people just missing. And so she started looking into this. People were coming to her for help because they were having nightmares. They couldn't sleep. They kept seeing a white owl, you know, when they would go to sleep, the screen memory type thing. And so they dramatized this movie. There's a trailer out about it now that is available. And I highly recommend anybody look at it because it is a very dramatic movie. It's sort of along the same lines that Whitley Strieber's was, but it's a little more dramatic, I think.
Well, thank you very much for that reference.
Okay.
Yeah, I'll keep a lookout for that for sure.
Okay. I'll get off here and let others call in. I just wanted to see if you were aware of her work.
No. What is her name again?
Her name is Dr. Abigail Tyler, and in the movie she's played by Mila Jovovich.
Spell that last name for us, Mike.
All right. It's Jovovich. First name, Milla.
Jovovich.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's Jovovich.
Oh,
okay, thank you.
Well, Mike, thank you, and thank you for doing your work that you're doing in Kentucky.
All right. Folks, the telephone lines are open. The telephone number is 623-444-5889. The toll-free number is 888-223-4599. If you happen to be outside of the USA and you happen to be outside of Canada, in other words, you're not in the USA, you're not in Canada, you can send me a flash message. If you are in the USA and you are in Canada, please use the phone lines, okay? And don't tell me you can't afford it. I even pay for the call. All righty, caller, you are live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Hello, yes, it's Kevin from North Bay, Ontario.
Hi, Kevin.
Hello there, Kevin. Hello, Barbara. Great show tonight.
Hello.
I'm a researcher into this also. I've also been investigating. I've interviewed some people who have been contactees. You know, we ufologists, you know, we have a tough time enough for trying to convince the world that there is this presence that's been on this planet for quite some time. And in some cases, these extraterrestrials have been here since we began to be in existence on this planet. But you know, trying to prove that these things actually exist is one thing, but trying to find out for why these people are being abducted, the ones that are actually being abducted by real aliens and not some sort of secret black ops, which also does happen. Mm-hmm. But why have the, in your opinion, why have the aliens been abducting people? You know, the Greys or the reptilians, why have they been abducting people? There's many theories about that also.
Oh, yes. Well, you see, the thing is, Kevin, that there are so many different kinds of beings that come to the Earth and interact with people and, in many cases, abduct people for an hour or two of time. And it seems like each group of extraterrestrials has their very own agenda. They have their own purpose for coming here. So some of them, like the little gray beings who may or may not be working for some other kinds of beings, they may do a lot of medical procedures and taking samples from us and testing our different physiological systems, learning a lot about us, taking fluids, skin samples, etc., and even taking reproductive material from our males and females who experience this. And some of those beings seem to be very bent on creating what we would call hybrid beings, part of their reproductive material and part of ours. And there are various reasons given by different kinds of beings for hybridization. And some of those reasons seem to make sense to us, too. And then other beings seem to be here to work with humans for a very, very different reason. They are sometimes healing the people they're working with and healing them of some pretty drastic things, like severe heart problems. Even one man I regressed many times had a congenital hole in his heart, and his being, who approached him when he was even a fetus in his mother's womb, that far back in his life, the being placed an electromagnetic strip over the hole in his heart and explained to him, this all came out in regression, that if he didn't have this happen, that he wouldn't be able to live very long after birth because of this congenital defect. So that's one example. And that being kept meeting with this man and throughout his childhood and his adulthood, and kept sort of refurbishing that, what he called an electromagnetic strip over the hole in the man's heart. Anyway, I could say a lot more about that, but another woman that I've worked with had a very rare blood disorder, and in 1972 she was taken by these beings for three whole days and nights, and we regressed on that experience, and she was scanned by these beings and what we would liken to an MRI type of machine. And then they did a lot of healing of her from many different directions with colored laser lights, and said that she already had the blood disorder, but that they were stopping its progress, and that if they didn't, she would be dying of it very soon. And she was only in her early 20s. Well, years later, she did realize through medical exams that she did have, indeed, a rare blood disease, but the doctors were just amazed that it hadn't progressed. And it still hasn't in 2009 developed. And she thinks it has to do with what those extraterrestrial beings did. So I have many examples from different people who have been healed.
All right, now Kevin brought up something I want us to talk about just a little bit here, and that is he used the term contactees, and he used the term abductees. Is there a difference between contactees and abductees? And if there is, what's that difference?
Well, that's why I like to simply call them experiences. Uh-huh. And instead of calling a person a contactee or an abductee, I like to call them an experiencer, because any one person could have some experiences which seem to be more self-serving on the part of the beings who take them and seem to be more for their own benefit rather than the person's benefit. But then, and we might call that person an abductee or having an abduction experience, but the same person might on other occasions be taken by beings who are very, very benevolent toward that person. And I mentioned the healing, and sometimes they really educate the person and download a lot of valuable information into the person's mind, and they might even teach the person psychic skills and telepathy and psychokinesis and so forth. And some beings really help the experiencer to have very spiritual, transformational experiences, which are glorious. I mean, absolutely spiritually, totally enlightening. So you could call that person at that point a contactee. So it's really a mixture.
Mm-hmm.
And anybody who's regressed more than, say, three or four times with me, as some people have been able to do, find that they do have this wide variety of experiences with very different types of beings. So I don't like to label somebody as simply an abductee or a contactee, but you can see contactee, I think, generally...
It's more for their benefit, and they're more open to it.
Yes, and usually very enlightening, inspiring experiences from those beings.
All right, we have a break taking over in less than 30 seconds. Caller, are you willing to hang on through the break?
No props.
Okay, very good. You hang in there, and on the other side of this break, we're going to take you first up. Fascinating, fascinating discussion this evening with Barbara Lamb, and our telephone lines are open. Our flash message line is open. If you're outside of the USA and you're outside of Canada, go to my website, scroll down, and click the link that says flash message. We'll be back right after this. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show, and to my guest this evening, Barbara Lamb. Barbara, let's take this call. Caller, you are live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name, and from where are you calling?
My name is Colin, and I'm calling from New York.
Okay, Colin.
I'm calling because I had my own encounter in January of 08, and even as I was going through the moment, it was a very lucid moment, but the challenge of my grounding into reality, and you know how you perceive the world, and you know what the limits of what you can conceive as real, those things were very crowded and anxious at that time in my mind. I really couldn't. And since then, you know, this is going on. This is a long time ago, and it was only a couple of seconds that I encountered the being, bright blue eyes, this kind of transparency at the feet that you talk about. It was prone, and it was almost like I caught it, as well as it caught me. There was a sort of hum that came over my being. It was like not. It was something within me, but it was like not something I was doing. And even though I was walking, it felt like I was almost like floating toward the fence where I looked in. Every time I've gone past this yard since that time, it seems more and more incredulous that the space doesn't seem right, you know. And I try to picture the way, you know, and they've since put a hot tub in, and even more so, it just compels me another way to, you know, you have to go away from the moment. And this is just, that's the most intense encounter I had, this thing. And I thought about the dimensional aspect at the time, even though when I wrote about it, I thought I had drawn what I had to say about myself out of it. I didn't. I thought, you know, maybe because of the bright blue eyes, I have very blue eyes, and my family, it's in my family, my dad had very blue eyes, and I thought, you know, it was after my dad had passed, and I thought, you know, it was, 5 years later, and I thought, you know, something with him, you know, that was one of the things that came up.
Okay, well, what do you think now? Was this...
I just, like, you know, I know it happened, mm-hmm. I know what I saw, and every time I try to bring it to terms with reality, that is, other than sounding it off myself or calling your show, because it's even only the feedback of this kind doctor here who might tell me something. But, you know, when I tell my wife, you know, it's like I can't talk about it.
Mm-hmm.
My daughter and I actually saw a UFO together. You know, since then, she's a youngster. She's only 9 now, and we saw it when she was 8. She's going to be 10 soon, so this is a while back, too. But it was very, you know, real thing at the moment. And to me, it's like, These moments crowd my reality every moment.
Okay, well, let's see what Barbara might have to say.
I want to hear what... And I also would like to know, my question really to her, too, is when you put a person like me under in regression, what are the compelling details that... I mean, I know we touched on it during the show, but what are the real compelling details that tell you that this is a sincere account, this is something that's really happening, this is beyond the scope of this person's ability and capacity? Like, you know, if this person couldn't just draw this out of their imagination, you know, this is obviously something that happened, you know. What is it that tells you that?
And what you're expressing here, you know, wondering about that, is something that probably everyone who experiences these things do wonder. And I think that, you know, the only way that you would really get your own answer to that is if you could experience doing a hypnotic regression with somebody who's open to this subject, so they don't just close right off, you know, and try to end it right away. Somebody who's trained and skilled to guide you through moment by moment, and then you would be able to determine for yourself the reality of it. It's the sort of thing where even I or anyone else would not really accurately be able to say for you, yes, that was a definite real experience, but you would know if you could relive it moment by moment. And by the way, if you would need a reference for somebody in the New York area who does this sort of work, I do have some referrals, some suggestions for people, and if you wanted to have a referral, you could email me, and I will give you the email address, and you could say where you are and what you would want there, and I could give you a referral. The email address is Barbara, that's B-A-R-B-A-R-A, and then the underscore line, and then lamb, L-A-M-B, at verizon.net. And I do have people emailing me from all over the country and even other countries who very much want to know of someone in their general geographic area that could help them with this sort of work. So, you know, it's very hard to just determine consciously whether these things really happen, but I think it's important and meaningful that you and with your daughter actually saw the UFO, and you put that together with the other things that you're aware of, even if they're just brief moments.
Yeah, well, I've had a lot of moments of, like, what I call high strangeness, this sort of thing.
Colin, let me ask you a question. And I ask this simply because of how you sound as you tell us about this. This event where you saw this being with the blue eyes, and you talked about, you know, that it really crowded your concepts of what's real. Are you still shaken about what reality is? And more importantly, does it make you question who you really are?
Well, I understand now that this journey I'm on, this life I'm on, we're all on. We're paying our mortgage. We're trying to hit these material marks all the time. These type of things, the things that weigh on us, get us anxious. Okay, this is our material thing. But I understand more now as I'm getting older, the spiritual aspect and the thing that one thing that I've seen in all these talks and radio shows and lectures I've listened to is and it sticks with me, and it's something I really try to carry into every single day. I have a little mantra I say, and I'll say it if you want, but the
yeah, but we have to move along now, because I have some other calls stacked up.
Yeah, this is the idea. The love that you withhold is the pain that you carry. This is a quote I got from a guy who said he had an experience with an alien, and the alien who was teaching him told him this. And even if his story is wrong and true and an untruth, and even if he's crazy or whatever he's telling, this is the whole thing. Even if we're going against these, crowding these concepts and anchors into reality, this purchase into reality, okay, that's a good lesson. You know, the love you withhold is the pain you carry. You think about it, and you take those two little lines, and you know what? It's don't withhold your love. Give your love to the day. And when you give your love to the day, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter if the day bruises you a little bit. You're still doing the right thing. And the more that a person like myself, a little Joe like myself, can do that, the more that we can do that. Let me tell you what. You know, I know you fling emotions against the wall in the face of logic all the time. And I understand that. I can't walk on water. I can't walk through the wall. We have a real world we have to deal with. But this untouchable, inscrutable sort of aspect that we have, that of love, this thing we can't define or know, but yet we find ourselves in it. Well, don't be a stranger to it, and don't crowd it away. You know, get yourself in touch with that and give it to people, because it's amazing.
Okay, Colin, I got to move along.
All right.
Well, everybody, but thanks for the call. Thanks for the call. I do want to make a correction. I don't throw the idea of love and emotions against the wall in favor of logic. Never have. But people who are very, very emotional think that, because what I say is you can't allow your emotions to drive the car. You have to let your mind drive the car. I love my kids, but when they're 5 years old, they're in the back seat, not behind the driver's wheel. Okay? And so what I say is that you have to use your mind to drive your life. Don't ignore your emotions, but you can't let your emotions drive. You do have to overrule your emotions sometimes. All right, caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Stefan from Quebec City. Kevin, how are you?
Outstanding, Stefan.
Ms. Lamb, fascinating show. I just love hearing about this subject. My question to you is, have you had any experience with contactees or abductees that have said that their experiences messed up their personal lives in terms of romantic relationships? And also, have they had any feelings that the beings interacting with them were romantically linked, in other words, soulmates or beings that they had kind of weird here, but cosmic relationships with, I guess. Do you know what I mean?
Yes, well, that is a very comprehensive question, or the subject is huge. And first of all, your question about half abduction sort of messed up somebody's personal life or personal relationships. Sometimes, yes, I think that has happened, especially when those experiences are not really fully looked into and, you know, treated therapeutically. In other words, people who have reproductive processes going on with some of these extraterrestrial beings, or even couplings with some extraterrestrial beings, matings, in other words, sometimes that is traumatic enough that the person who experiences that may not really want to be intimate with their own Earth partner, you know, their own Earth spouse or partner, and that can really get in the way. I have known of a number of cases where that has been true. But the good news there is that if someone has the regression, and or even more than one regression, and realizes what's been happening from these other beings, and have some therapeutic interventions with it, then they may be able to, you know, have more intimate relationships with their own partner here on Earth. So that's one thing, but it is quite common for the people who do have sexual types of experiences in their encounters to find that that's pretty confusing. And one of the reasons why it's confusing is because they sense that something has happened in that regard, but they don't know what it was. And that's why the regression sometimes helps. It sort of brings out the details, and then they can sort of put it in its proper place, and it doesn't have to mess up the relationship with their personal partner here. Now, I've forgotten what the second part of your question was.
We'll have to get to that after the break, because we have a break taking over in 10 seconds. Stefan, do you want to hang on?
This time I will, Kevin.
Okay. All right, folks, on the other side of this break, we will continue with Barbara Lamb and Stefan Wutany. We'll be back right after this. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. We are on Final Approach. That means we only have a few minutes left in tonight's broadcast. And if you plan to call, you may be able to get in. 623-444-5889 or toll free at 888-223-4599. We have Stefan holding. Stefan, what was the second question?
Well, genetically speaking, we know that we're going to be needing new blood here on the planet at some point, and I'm wondering if these beings or entities are preparing us to have a broader sense of what it is to have a relationship. I know that sounds weird, but is it possible to have a romantic relationship? Have you ever had any abductees who said that they had that?
Yes, well, I've had several people whom I've regressed, and these are people I've regressed quite a number of times. With each person, and they've actually realized that they've had ongoing personal relationships with a particular extraterrestrial being. In one case, it was a woman whom I regressed probably 20 or 25 times over a period of a few years in the 1990s, and she had a lifelong relationship with a tall reptilian type of being, and he was a good friend all through her childhood and a good friend in adulthood, but she began to realize in these regressions that she was having a sexually intimate relationship with him too as an adult. And he said to her, when she asked why was that intimacy happening every time she was taken to visit him, he said, well, it's because I'm your husband. And she said, well, you can't be my husband. I'm married too, and she gave the name of her husband, back there on Earth in Southern California in this case. And he said, yes, well, that's your Earth husband, and I'm your space husband. And they had a long relationship, and they had hybrid children who didn't look enough human-like for them to live here, but she did meet with them sometimes when she was taken to the craft where they lived. That's just one example, but there are others where there's been kind of an ongoing relationship with a particular extraterrestrial being, and very often these hybrid children. And sometimes people have had ongoing mentor types of relationships that did not have anything to do with reproduction or sexual activity, but the extraterrestrial would be a teacher or a guide or a mentor over a period of many years of the person's life, teaching them all kinds of things that could be useful here on Earth. And so, yeah, sometimes they really do have an ongoing relationship with a particular being.
All right, let's take our last telephone call. Caller, you are live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Hi, Kevin. I'm from Oshawa, Ontario, Canada.
Okay, and your first name?
John.
Okay, John.
Hey, well, back there you mentioned you had an ordeal there up in the mountains, Tibet, I believe. Have you ever been to the grass?
I've never been to Tibet.
You
must be thinking of someone else.
I have.
Oh, you have?
To Tibet.
Okay.
I don't know how you would know that.
I do a lot of research there. I got a little confused, sorry. And maybe you could tell us a little bit about that, and I'll take it off the air. Thank you.
Okay. As for me, I've never been to Tibet. I have friends there. I have friends in Nepal, but I've never been there either. So I really don't know what to say.
Well, that's so interesting because I was in Tibet in 1991 for about a month. Very fascinating experience. And I did make a very good friend, a young man who I believe is still there. And what wonderful people they are. Now, I haven't been aware of any extraterrestrial type of thing or UFO type of experience that happened when I was there, but it was wonderful in its own right.
Well, there are some reports. I don't know how accurate these reports are. There are some reports that have come out, news reports, of a lot of UFO activity along the Tibetan-China border. Now, I know China says Tibet is China, but there is a border line. Maybe they would say it's the province line or the state line. But along that border, there have been quite a number of UFO sightings. One of the newspapers in India is reporting, has reported, that they have word that the Chinese have actually built a base. It's occupied by extraterrestrials in that area. Now, how accurate that is, I don't know. I can just say that report is out there. And maybe it's real, maybe it's not.
Well, that is very interesting.
Mm-hmm. Now, you were in Tibet when?
1991.
Mm-hmm.
And it's interesting that that's the same year that I became involved in doing regression work with people who experience extraterrestrial encounters. Before that, for several years, I had been doing regression work with people who didn't necessarily have those kinds of encounters, but people who wanted to get back to the source of whatever their particular problem was. And many of those regressions took us into previous lifetimes.
Mm-hmm.
And we found the source of the problem and were able to clear up the person's difficulty at the source, and that really was a very good healing technique. I'd also like to say, while we're on that topic, that a lot of people who come to me wonder the question, why me? In other words, why do I have these encounters? And most of the people I know don't have them. And one of the things that comes out when we regress to the source of their having these extraterrestrial encounters is that they either did have them in previous lifetimes, or they were the member of an extraterrestrial race themselves in a previous lifetime. So that's very interesting. And other reasons come out is that the person who experiences this might have a certain family genetic line that the extraterrestrials are very interested in following through, studying from generation to generation.
Barbara, we've only got a minute and 30 seconds. I want you to kind of park right there and tell us something. Why would they be interested in a bloodline?
Well, that we can only guess at, really. I've never had an extraterrestrial actually spell that out. But I guess they're following certain characteristics and seeing how often those characteristics get passed down to subsequent generations. And it might even be, I mean, this is conjecture, but it might even be that there's been some influence of, let's say, a great-great-great-grandfather, and they're looking to see if that influence by the extraterrestrials has been carried out, has been appearing in subsequent generations.
Mm.
That is just a guess, but it does seem that people who do experience these encounters do very often have a parent or a grandparent or an aunt or an uncle or a cousin or even a great-grandparent, and then their own child as well, who do seem to be having these encounters. It's
well,
very rare, I think, that a person alone has them and nobody else in their family does.
Yeah. Well, Barbara, it's been fascinating. I want to thank you for being with us. And I hope you'll be with us again in the future. If you will, just stay on the phone with me for a moment as we close the show. Ladies and gentlemen, that's a wrap. I told you if you miss a single second, you miss a universe of information, right? I told you the truth. My friends call me Steel Eye. My enemies do too. You can call me whatever you want. Just keep coming back again and again and again. Until next time, so long, everybody.